seen a lot of you guys there. It's Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock at St. Andrew's Episcopal, right off of Princess Anne over there. Step five. The little intro says, having made a personal inventory, and to do that, at least some sort of buy-in on the first three steps was necessary for me. I've done a couple of these now in the past year and a half, and I did one when I came around a few years ago. And a lot of this second paragraph especially applies to me. I just love most of these paragraphs you pick out in this group, especially just point out the clear-cut directions, like your intro to the meeting says. Makes it easy for a guy like me. I saw this meme on the internet today, and especially with sponsoring guys, now this applies. So I'll just read this. Like, as an alcoholic, this applies to me. My talents include giving advice I wouldn't use myself, staying up till 2 a.m. worrying about things that aren't happening, and forgetting not to swear in front of children. Like, that's me. And a lot of other things that I found out through writing a fourth step. The stuff still happens today, but there's a process in place that's numbered 1 through 12, in case I had any doubts about it. And the middle section of that is 4, 5, and 6. When going through one of these, there's a lot of adjectives in these two paragraphs that I don't really like to get honest with myself about. But if I just sit there and do the work and do it as it's laid out in the book, I come out with an inventory that shows the exact nature of my defects. And I did find it difficult. I wrote a fourth step one time and left a lot of stuff out of it. And so I drank again. I drank worse than I did before. And I landed myself right back here. And just a little bit too, while I'm just sort of circling around before really diving in here, I love to drink. It worked up for a long time in my life. I love to get ripped up and just make terrible decisions. And a lot of that came out in the fourth step. I mean, I drank to excess. I mean, I told myself I wasn't an alcoholic, but in writing the inventory, I would look back when I did my whole life story, and there was like, I lived over in Italy for a little bit during college, and I had four roommates, and I found the guy that drank just like I did. He and I would get out of class if we decided to go that day, get a bottle of vodka, a liter or whatever, and we'd sit at a table like this one, And we'd sit at one end, we'd put one cup of chaser in the middle, we'd split the bottle into two other cups, and we'd race each other. You know, whoever won got the chaser. By the end of it, I was drinking mine, finishing his out of his hand, and giving him the chaser. And then sprinting to the bar before I blacked out. And getting told the next day about all the stuff that I did that night. That's like just a snapshot of that. That was when drinking was still working for me. It wasn't that bad. It took 5 or 6 more years for me to come around with any sort of admission of complete defeat or anything like that. And so a lot of people got hurt in that process. A lot of people. And so that's why you guys tell me to write a fourth step. You know, I've gone through, I've done the column work as laid out by somebody who has done it before with my sponsor. And I did quite a substantial one this time around. Because I had a substantial body of work coming in, and I really took this to heart. You know, honest and thorough, fearless, searching—all those adjectives that that I think don't apply to a guy like me having to do these steps. I just went ahead and did them because you guys said it would be a good idea. You pointed out things to me like this. How about look at the best reason first? You know, if we skip this vital step and. Vital doesn't just mean important. You know, that the root of that word is life. This is giving me life, this vital step. Then I might not ever come drinking. And it goes on to just tell my story. I got drunk. You know, I was apologizing to people. I was doing ninth step stuff before I was in here for 30 days, you know, a few years ago. But this time around, for some reason, I was able to just pretty much stay where I was supposed to be in the steps. And something happened on the back end of that process, and it sort of altered the way I think about you guys and I think about life a little bit. And that continues to happen for me today. You know, there's a lot of stuff rings true. I definitely was one who thought I had lost my egoism and fear. You know, today, I know that's not true. I wake up today in egoism and fear. I know that. You know, and I have to continually turn back to the third step in the morning. And then another step we're going to read tonight, and just include that in my sort of daily meditation, and try to put that into practice. You know, humility, fearlessness, and honesty are things that I thought I always had. You know, and I had them when they worked for me. You know, I'd be humble, you know, make you feel good, build you up, then take something from you. You know, so it was all in the guise of trying to get what I wanted. You know, I look at the fourth step inventory and then I read it to someone. And I don't know, it was easy for me. Once I actually wrote it out to go to my sponsor this time, I was ready. I think it was just still desperation. I don't know. I did it pretty quickly, got to this point, and just did it, like I said. And so it was fairly easy for me this time to just to get all the way down to the causes and conditions and just share them with somebody. You know, God's already seen what you've been doing the whole time, Randall. So why is that a barrier for you? You know what it is, and you've already written it down, so that shouldn't be an issue. And this guy right here is saying he'll walk with you through whatever it takes. So why don't you just take that leap of faith and tell this guy, and just see what happens. So that's what I did, you know. And then by the end of that, me and that guy had a different relationship with each other. He knew everything about me, and I knew a heck of a lot about him, because each time I would tell a story, I'm like, man, I can't tell him about the time that pimp stole my wallet in Winston-Salem. You know, how idiotic was that? And the guy could sit there and match me, you know, and almost story for story. And at the end, just I don't know if this is true or not, but I got a little I still have a chip on my shoulder from this one, but he's like, I kept a couple Trump cards just in case. I was like, man, mine's not that good anyway. You know? I'm like, he's holding on to some more stuff. But it really, really put me at ease being on a level with one other person like that. And what it did, let me make sure I'm not skipping ahead. Yeah, I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thanks, Randall. Hey, I'm Maggie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
Maggie. My sobriety date is June 24th, 2014, and I have a home group and a sponsor. My home group is Big Book in Ghent. It's tomorrow night at 5:30. I'll qualify just a tiny bit because I think, especially for a newcomer, these steps, especially 6 and 7, can seem kind of unattainable, kind of cerebral, and I just want to get grounded a little bit before we go there. I started drinking really young. I was 11, and I was a blackout drinker from day one. I was a daily drinker by the time I was 14, and when I came into the rooms when I was 26, I knew I was an alcoholic already. I had given up on trying. I knew that there was a problem. I knew I was powerless. But what I didn't know was that there was a spiritual solution. I looked at the steps on the wall and I saw God all over the place. And that was very scary to me because I didn't really believe in God. But I definitely you know, had that spiritual experience early on, and came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And those first couple of spiritual steps, 2 and 3, you know, play such an important part for me in 5, 6, and 7. I never prayed growing up. Maybe when I was like 5 or 6, I prayed little rote prayers. But after that, I had never prayed. And my first sponsor made me pray when I was at the end of my rope, when I realized I had no coping mechanisms without alcohol and drugs. I was about 60 days in, and I had nothing to switch off the stress. And so I had this conundrum in front of me. Would I drink? Would I kill myself? Or would I try this prayer thing that my sponsor kept pushing me to try? And I was, you know, I was crying. I didn't want to do it. I couldn't pray. I didn't believe anything. But I tried it because I was desperate enough. And I woke up the next day and I felt like a different person. And drastic spiritual experiences like that are not always the case, but it's what I needed to buy in to a higher power, and it's what I got. And now I'll actually get to step 5. it's how I get through every single day, is reliance upon a higher power. But for what we just read, this part that says, especially discussing our defects with another person, we think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. Well, that's basically how I feel about everything. Like, you know, I know what's going on, and, you know, I can handle it. Self-reliance, right? But part of my disease is that I look at something, you know, it enters my brain, and as soon as it gets in there, I mix it up, and it comes back out a twisted, manipulated mess. That's basically what happens to everything that goes into my brain. I don't know what's good for me. I don't know what I need. And that's why having a sponsor is so important, and why discussing your inventory with somebody else is such an essential part of the steps. You know, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. And I want to overcome drinking. So far, I have been able to overcome drinking. And I'm sure that if I kept all of these things to myself, I wouldn't be able to overcome drinking. Because, first of all, looking at your inventory, I mean, it's such an emotional process to put together an inventory. You have all these things in front of you that, you know, are not very pretty necessarily, like things I've done, things I still do on a regular basis. And looking at those myself, what I'm going to do is I'm going to really beat myself up for that. And if I don't share it with someone else, I'm just going to sit there and stew in the sort of like shame and discomfort of, look at all these things that I've done that, you know, maybe I still do, these habits, these ways of being, the way that I live my life. And without sharing that with somebody else to get an outside perspective, that just that alone, living in the shame, is going to lead me to drink. Because that's one of the things that led me to drink, you know, all along, was knowing, you know, having this belief in my heart that I was less than, I do these awful things even though I don't want to. I mean, that's why I drank. And keeping all that inside is going to lead me to drink again. So, I mean, the thing that keeps me from wanting to do that, sure, is my pride. I don't want to share that information with somebody else. Like, I don't want someone else to see, like, what ugly mess is going on in here. So humility, fearlessness, honesty, and those are not my strong suits. You know, I want to present to the world, you know, the best image of myself, you know. And certainly self-reliance was when I came in, I thought self-reliance was like my biggest asset, right? Like, I can take care of myself. I don't need anybody. That's what like that's what I want to be. That's what I strive towards. And humility is really like the opposite of that, right? Like knowing that I can't handle it on my own. I can't do it myself. I need someone else with me. You know, that's something I really had to learn in here. I don't want to skip ahead, so that's all I have for now.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character, the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. Randy?
My whole life, I've been making up what I think that you think I should be. That's what my whole life has been built on. You know, and like it says up front, I mean, more than most people do this, then there's an implication there. Most people, not just us, not just me. But I've built up so many roles to try to get desired outcomes for myself that the lie I told you last Tuesday about where I was and the one that I had to tell my mother this Thursday, and, you know, the other one about, you know, I can't keep them straight. I'm just done. I built up so many walls based on what I think you should think about what I should be saying, doing, feeling. It gets burdensome after a while. You know, that part of it was there before I drank for me. You know, and I don't know, I can't really put my finger on it, but I was very concerned about what you guys thought. You know? And that's still there too. Sorry if you're new. And I love that you were talking about this is the part of the process for me when this went from like an esoteric thing to real. 5, 6, and 7 made it real for me. I don't know, part of the club or whatever you want to call it, but once I actually put in a little bit of work and walked through this with somebody, it was no longer this like cluster of ideas that you guys knew about and that I was on the outside looking in, trying to understand. You know, bottom line is I finally got my butt kicked enough to do what you guys do. Through this process, 5, 6, 7, and then the rest of them, you know, what you guys think becomes a little bit, what I think you guys think, let me just clarify that too, mm-hmm. What I think you guys think about me becomes a little bit less important. Just a little bit. And that's a huge relief. It's a huge relief for a guy like me. And then it opens up a whole new realm of possibilities. Like, hey, Randall, you can be Randall and be okay. You know, you don't have to keep BSing these people. You know, and that's an amazingly freeing experience. And it started right here. You know, that 1, 2, 3 relapse, 1, 2, 3 relapse, whatever. 1, 2, 3 drink, whatever. However you want to call it, that happened to me a lot. It just really meant after I finally got through this that I wasn't willing or ready at that point in time to follow through with the actual work. But the weight that I felt lifted off my shoulders after doing a fifth step was amazing. I was actually calm and serene for like 2 days which is ridiculous for a guy like me. It's absolutely insane. I could look everybody in the eyes, you know, be perfectly fine with where I was for like 2 days. I was like, this stuff might work. And then my sponsor's like, yeah, 6-7, and then you need to go and talk to these people. I'm like, oh, crap, here we go again. More of this work. And I call it work, man. It feels like work sometimes. Really, it's just being a decent person, I think. But let's call it work. How about that? But this is the very, very beginning of a spiritual experience, right? Now I'm jumping ahead. But if I could just hammer home for anybody who's new, once you get into the meat and potatoes of this section here, for me, like I said, everything panned out. Like the feelings of like uselessness, how terrible I am, what a piece of junk I am, who's also better than everybody in this room at the same time. All of that stuff sort of started to attenuate a little bit here. I was not as bad as I thought I was. Unfortunately, I wasn't as good as I thought I was either, but, you know, this process sort of just, it pulled away all of that stuff that I put on the actual facts and just let me look at them, discuss them with somebody else, get some actual decent guidance from that person, and just move on from there. Thanks.
Thanks, Renee. Okay, I love this paragraph. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He's very much the actor. I think that's funny because I used to be an actor, and that's what I was trained to do in school, and I did it for a living, and I was really good at it in my life as well as my job. I definitely led a double, triple, quadruple life. And like Randall said, the roles that I play change depending on who I'm talking to. You know, when I was younger and I first sort of discovered the world of drinking, I would go out and the role I would play was, you know, the wild child. And I would come home and the role that I would play is the helpful daughter. And, you know, I got a little older, I would meet a boy that I liked. The role I might play is the victim that needs to be saved. You know, there are all these roles that I made up for myself. And it was based on what I thought you wanted me to be, what I wanted to get from you. Definitely, that's what do I need right now? Do I need pity and sympathy? Do I want to be taken care of? How can I get that from you? It was always about, you know, how my needs are going to be met and how you could make that happen for me. You know, that's in a fifth step. That can be really hard to talk about with somebody. But I found myself my first fifth step actually being really excited about it. I had come into the rooms feeling so different then, so isolated from, and I started to hear people, you know, saying things that I could relate to, and I was so relieved. You know, I thought, I'm not totally crazy, I'm not a degenerate from society, like, I'm just an alcoholic, this is the room I need to be in. And I started to feel really relieved that I was going to get to spit some of this stuff out to somebody who maybe understood a little bit. And it was a very cathartic experience that doesn't end there. I will do my best not to skip ahead, but these three steps are so tightly interwoven. That might be hard. Let's see. Yeah, maybe I will just stop right there. Yeah, so I don't skip ahead.
We're going to pick up on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we're prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it. illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe.
Yeah, I'm glad that sponsorship is around, because me going around picking somebody to read an inventory to is a scary thought, you know. Oh my God. So this first little bit was pretty much implied that this was what was going to happen once I got to this point, you know, in this walk with my sponsor. You know, I think that he realized that this is a life and death errand. He's an alcoholic too. And so this was all just sort of, let's do this. He was glad to help and honored by my confidence, I think. You know, being on the other receiving end of a fourth step as well, I know that that's the way I feel. You know, I've listened to a couple of guys written inventories, and that's a really, really cool thing to be a part of. One of the guys, I could physically see the same thing I was describing to you guys a few minutes ago. It just was like he lightened up. And, you know, I don't believe in magic or like a hocus pocus or any of that, but I could just see in his eyes the way that he was acting, the way that he was talking to you guys outside the meetings and stuff like that for the next little bit. I could just tell that this guy felt that thing. He felt like, maybe what we're talking about here, like his spiritual experience had begun. You know, maybe he felt at perfect ease and peace, especially around us, because we get it, you know? That feeling that, you know, part of the club, that bunch of ideas is no longer an esoteric sort of ethereal thing. All of that stuff I could see in his eyes. You know, I love the way this paragraph is structured. We get some promises here, I think. We can look the world in the eye. You know, we feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. I think those two thoughts are exactly the same thing. You know, God, for me, is expressed through you guys. You know, and how do I treat God good? I don't know, why don't I start with you guys and see how that works out for me. You know, if I can look you guys in the eye, that means I'm doing a decent job of that. And so maybe he'll be happy that I'm playing nice on the playground instead of rubbing your face in the sandbox or whatever. You know, that's what I felt like I did a lot. It's tough. Like, pocketing my pride is a tough thing to do, you know, but if I just trust this process that it's worked for you guys who've been around here for a while, and that it could potentially work for a guy like me too, then it doesn't look so hard. You know, just follow instructions, and you know, you can do this, Randall. That's basically what I got handed. And then I got all these other things it talks about here in this second paragraph we read. You know, I don't know that I even had spiritual beliefs. I thought spirituality was cool from a distance. Like, yeah, that, you know, that works for them, whatever they're doing. You know, sort of feeling my way through this for the past year and a half, and just doing the 12 steps has given me some insight and some good sort of, I don't know, experience to ground some beliefs in, you know. And and this fourth, fifth step was a really big part of that. Thanks.
Yeah, pocketing our pride and going for every dark cranny of the past. So when I came in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous and I read all of the steps, I knew in the back of my mind there were like these couple of things that I was not going to tell anybody. Like, I started hearing sort of about how the process would go, that I would have to, you know, make this list, and I was going to have to tell somebody, like, everything horrible I've ever done. And there's that part in the books, it's like, you know, some people are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. I was like, oh, well, God, that's me. Like, clearly this isn't going to work for me because I'm incapable. And not only am I incapable, but I'm unwilling. Maybe I am capable, but I'm definitely not willing to be that honest. I got these couple things. I'm definitely hanging on to them. I will never share them with another human being. Once I finally got to this part of the steps, I was definitely whistling a different tune. And I shared these things with, you know, my first sponsor, and she happened to not have any experience with these things that I shared with her, and encouraged me to share about it in a meeting. Because, you know, by that point I had really sort of, I dove into my inventory and I just had a lot going on with it. You know, I feel like I needed more, guidance. And so she encouraged me to share about it in a meeting, and I was terrified, and I cried in this meeting, and I could barely get it out. And as soon as I was finished sharing, the girl sitting right next to me leaned over and whispered in my ear, "That exact same thing happened to me." And like, it was at that point, I think, where I really just, I was like, all right, like, clearly I'm taken care of here. And it was just, you know, over and over again in this program, I'm getting exactly what I need if I can just take the little baby steps along the way. If I can just reach out. And, you know, this fifth step really repeats itself in my daily life when I'm going over my daily inventories with my sponsor. Like, every time something comes up that I know I need to discuss immediately with another human being. That all starts right here in the fifth step. Like, we need to discuss it immediately with another human being. And, you know, withholding nothing. They use really specific language in this book. If you ever get a chance to read the, what is it? It's like the unedited manuscript or something. It's interesting to make the comparison because they use really, really specific language. Half measures avail us nothing. Withholding nothing. You know, it's one thing for me to feel willing to admit, you know, certain types of things. Like, I burgled a convenience store, or, you know, I, you know, slept with this person or that person by accident. Like, these are things that, you know, I can kind of laugh it off. Oh, that was so funny. I was so drunk. I know it's really bad. But, like, these other things are a little more difficult. Withholding nothing. Like, if I discover on my inventory, you know, I'm really not concerned with anybody's needs but my own. I really don't care how anybody else feels. You know, I lie. I manipulate. Like, these are not things that are easy to say out loud. I would really much rather tell, like, the story of, you know, when I crash somebody's car. Yeah, I'm probably going to have to make an amends for that. But how about, you know, when I broke somebody's heart because I just didn't care? You know, those are the things that are the hardest for me and were the hardest for me. And also the things that, you know, I'm able to really touch on a daily basis, you know, living the principles, working the program. I don't have to keep doing those things. You know, it doesn't necessarily go away and never come back. You know, alcoholism is a progressive disease, and over any given period of time, it gets worse and never better. So, you know, I still lead a double life sometimes in sobriety. You know, when you ask me how I'm doing and I say, I'm great, I'm fine, yeah, I'm going to lots of meetings, but really in between those meetings, you know, I'm at home and I'm depressed and I'm afraid. You know, I'm leading a double life there. And withholding nothing means I really need to share that information with somebody immediately, or I'm going to drink again. And that process and the trust and the willingness, you know, that's how I get to this point where I feel like I'm on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. I never experienced that feeling before I worked the steps all the way through. So that's all I have.
Okay, moving into the step 6 and 7 on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Randall?
At this point, when I came around this time, this book was nowhere near a shelf. I remember coming around for, the first 3 months, and this book was in like a little man purse, like this close to me at all times. Like, I wouldn't let this thing away from my body. I was terrified. Like, truly terrified that something bad was going to happen. And this was just like a reminder. Like, hey man, keep doing this stuff. Bunch of people with a lot more time than you and life experience than you say just keep doing this stuff. So there was no bookshelf involved for me. You know, I've heard of people putting this up on the shelf and taking it back down. That's what the book says to do, man. Do it. All that stuff's not really that important to me, that particular instruction. The next set of instructions are pretty important to me. I'm trying to think right now the last time I took a whole hour to just meditate on any set of ideas. It was probably this time last year. Actually, about 3 or 4 months ago, I did one of these, and that was the last time I took a whole hour. And the only 2 times that I can remember in my life were 2 fifth steps that I took a whole hour to just meditate on one set of ideas. And something happened. I mean, definitely the first time was overwhelming for me to do that. You know, reviewing the first 5 proposals, what does that mean? Well, the book tells me open to this page. There's 5 there. Let's read them. Let's make sure you're good with them, Randall. Do you understand them, first of all? Do you understand what the words mean? You know, and so you spend some time thinking about that. Do you believe that that you're in this seat for a reason? You know? Do you believe the third step? Do you believe that you're in this world to play the role that He's assigning you? Whatever that is, under any circumstances. Well, you did this inventory thing and you told it to somebody else. You know, that's a good place to start. I can't really describe what happened to me here, but it's kind of hard to wrap my own mind around what happens in my meditations. But, I came out of there changed. I had a different perspective. You know, just like the previous paragraphs have been describing, you know, and this is the way out too. If I have left anything out, this is my opportunity to catch that and run and tell my sponsor, you know, or somebody else. Let's do it quick, man. Let's get that stuff out of here, and do that. I never want to be vulnerability is not something I'm good at, you know, and this time around, I just did it. Some sort of willingness there that was never there before, and so he heard, my sponsor heard everything. I got to this point and sort of reviewed these questions here and looked at the first 5 proposals, and Not in my head, yes. Let's keep going. I'm feeling different. Different is good. Like, if you were where I was at, I mean, I was beat up, man. You know, I don't know. My arms were black and blue. You know, it was terrible. It was terrible. I was, the people I was hanging out with, the things I was doing, were despicable. You know, the people I was stealing money from to do the things that I had to do to feel any sort of decent for any period of time were bad. You know, so change was welcome at this point. Thanks.
This taking a whole hour thing, you know, I can't remember the last time I really sat down and meditated for an hour. But I did, when I did my fifth step, I actually did sit down and, you know, think about it for an hour quietly, somewhere to be quiet, carefully reviewing what we have done, you know, looking from the end of step five back all the way to the beginning of step one. And it will take an hour to take a look at how far you come in those five steps. I felt like a different person by that point, and taking that time to really meditate on that, even if you don't meditate, you know, just sitting and listening, because I had a sponsor who told me, you know, prayer is when you're talking to God and meditation is when you're listening. So there's a lot that can happen in just sitting quietly for an hour and reflecting. A lot of people like writing, and that's a form of meditation. And thanking God from the bottom of our heart. You know, in the morning is a good time for like a please be with me prayer, and in the evening is always a good time for a thank you prayer. And this is the time for, you know, thank you meditation, and really to focus on that. Because it is really by the grace of God that I got through that inventory. And it takes some reflection to sort of wrap your head around that. Doing the inventory is sort of like cleaning out your closet. You're pulling out all the things that you don't want anymore, and there they are strewn about everywhere. It's a mess, and you're about ready to ask your higher power to take it all away now. You know, I don't want to leave that stuff lying around. That's extremely painful. It's messy. I can't live that way. If I don't move forward through these steps, if I'm not ready, if I haven't really made sure that I haven't left anything out, I'm going to still have all this junk lying around. So, you know, reviewing what you have done and making sure there's not sort of that sinking feeling in the back of your mind, because I often try and discount little things, like, this isn't really important enough to share with someone. It's not like I feel like I'm going to go buy a bottle of bourbon right now over it. Like, there's really no reason to bring it up. Like, if it's running through your mind at all, like, then it, or my mind, if it's running through my mind at all, it's something that I need to share. Because those little, petty, inconsequential things pile up on me, and that is what is going to lead me to go back out and pick up a drink, is if, you know, I don't really clean house. I don't really go back and make sure I didn't leave anything out. Even the stuff that I think is stupid, because it's not stupid to me. And even if it is stupid to someone else, if it's not stupid to me, if it's nagging at me, it's going to be something that makes me drink. Because this disease wants me to drink no matter what. And it's going to find a way if I'm not really, really thorough. All right, that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, we got two more paragraphs. I'm just going to read them both and let you guys share on those together, and then we'll close the meeting. Page 76, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we look at step six. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable. Can he take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. When ready, we say something like this: My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step seven.
Steps 4 and 5 take a really long time. 6 and 7 is like, what is that, 1 hour and 3 seconds to say that prayer? You take an hour, and then you say this prayer, right? But these things, I had an epiphany like 6 months into this thing, you know. What is it, approaching the obvious with an air of discovery? Like, that's me. I'm like 3, 7, and 11. That's where the magic happens, you know. Steps 3, 7, and 11. You guys don't understand. This is where it really goes down, you know. And I don't really have a whole lot to do. I make the decision, you know, and I keep seeking, and that's what 3, 7, and 11 look like today for me. You know, and I include 3 and this 7 is great here in the morning. I go down, I walk my dog. He likes to use the facilities in a certain place, and it's right on this little pond by my house, and it sounds really awesome, but, you know, I'm grumbling the whole way. Man, it's humid out today, you know, God, you know, walking down there. But I get down there, I assume the position, you know, on my knees, and this prayer is included in that little sort of ritual. And you know, every single defect of character, you know, like you were talking about, nobody likes a dirty room, you know, with clothes everywhere. Every single one, I stand willing, you know, and that allows me to do a little spot check of my willingness, which normally isn't super high, but you know, the language included in 7 too is you know, all my bad stuff and maybe some good things go away. Some things I think are good get taken away. Why? So I can be more useful to you guys and better do His will. Not because it makes me feel better. Sometimes both of those things happen, and it's really awesome for Randall. It's like, I feel a lot better, you know. But apparently that's not what this is about. It's about, you know, living the role that He's given me, you know, and trying to be useful to you guys. Another thing I just like to point out, too, whenever I'm doing a 6 with the guys that I work with is, whose satisfaction, who are we satisfying with the questions, you know, coming out of step 5 and moving into step 6? It's me. You know, my sponsor doesn't know the truth about my life. He knows what I told him, and he's accepting that as truth about me. But have I told him the whole story? You know, there's no way for him to tell. So I'm answering these questions just to my satisfaction. I know in my heart when I've done a thorough job. You know, I know in my heart when my inventory is fearless, searching, honest, thorough. All these things that we ascribe to the inventory writing process, and then the 5th step, which follows that. You know, because I think it goes back to a little bit of what you're talking about. If it's occupying space in my mind, that stuff's got to go. It's got to go. It doesn't matter, you know. I've had multiple conversations with my sponsor, and you know, how much is it bothering you? How much is it getting in your way of being useful to God and His children? Now, what we're trying to be here. If somebody's occupying space in my mind because you know, they left the bathroom a mess at my house, or you know, I'm mad at my dog because he ate, you know, my favorite baseball cap last night. How useful is that to you guys? If I'm just walking around like this, you know, because it's stuff that I have no control over, really. Not very useful. You know, so this inventory, just again, once I put it in black and white, it's like a whole a different thing. I can see myself for the dum-dum that I actually am. Then I can go and tell my sponsor about it. We can chuckle and laugh. Or if there's an amends to be made, we can carry on with the rest of the steps in the process. And that stuff just seems to not matter so much anymore. You know? And so I love this whole process. Five, you know, six and seven, I don't have a whole lot to do with. God's going to take that stuff away when it's he feels like it's suitable. Not when Randall works hard enough to remove them. You know, that doesn't stop me from trying. But this is really how I'm viewing six and seven right now, in my recovery and in my life. Thanks.
Thanks, Randall.
So the two words that really jump out to me about these two steps are willingness and humility. And the willingness is sort of what I'm willing to do. What's my part in this step? And that is, you know, I have to say, yes, I'm done with these things. I'm done. I can't make them go away. I can work as hard as my little heart can work, and I cannot make them go away. But am I willing to let go of them? Like, I know that God will do for me what I can't do for myself. But also, God's not going to pry it out of my Vulcan death grip, right? I have to be ready to let go of it. I have to know that even though I really like the feeling of superiority when I engage in office gossip, I have to be willing to let that go, even though I may like it. I mean, right? Like, all of our character defects, they do something for us, right? It's pleasing to me to express self-righteous anger. You know, been on Facebook lately. That feels pretty good. I like to put you in your place and let you know why I'm a lot smarter than you are. Am I really willing to let go of that? I don't have to make it disappear. I can't make it disappear, but I have to be willing to let God take it away. And that's where the humility part comes in. You know, when I first came into the rooms, I would have told you that I'm extremely humble. But
I agree.
That I had that confused with low self-esteem. I thought, I'm very humble. I have a very low opinion of myself. And I learned that humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. Because I'm always thinking of myself. I'm constantly taking my temperature. How do I feel now? How do I feel now? How do I feel now? And practicing humility means I'm not constantly focusing on myself. And the last thing I will say about step seven is that I tend to make it more of a daily practice. You know, six and seven are so short in the book, two little paragraphs. But I find that if I want God to always be removing these defects of character one day at a time, I have to say the seven-step prayer daily. And the space that I'm able to put between a feeling and an action, that's where the seventh step happens for me, right? If I'm angry and I am willing to pause and invite my higher power into that situation, that is step seven for me. Because otherwise, you know, I have a feeling, I want to act, I want to yell at you, I want to do something really inappropriate. Pausing and asking God to step in where I can't control myself, that's where step seven happens for me, like, on a daily basis. So, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, we are going to pass the seven tradition basket. Seven tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at, lost my place. It's essential, trust me. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA tonight? Grant.
I'm Grant, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
To announce, my own group is North Central Big Book, Tuesday night, 7 p.m., 1855 Bridge River. And this coming Tuesday, we have Lachey, young Q&A. He's got a pretty good message. He'll be out speaking for us, so I'll come out to support. And at the end of the month, we are in the process of printing flyers. But the title of the workshop is Common Wisdom Protect Our Heritage. It's going to be a tradition workshop. And all are welcome from 2 to 8 p.m. on August the 28th, which is a Sunday. Our speaker will be Harmony, Buster H., JP, and Helen B. Come out and make some fun traditions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other announcements?
I'm Jordan. I'm an alcoholic.
Jordan.
My home group is Cornerstone. This Saturday, we're having our four-year anniversary. It's going to be a luau theme, Hawaiian luau. I'm not going to make the obvious joke. We'll have food starting at 5:30. We have a speaker at 7. So come out. It'll be fun. I'll be cooking burgers.
Nice. Any other announcements? All right. These attractive, sort of suggestive of fall, don't you think? Sort of pumpkin-colored flyers.
Definitely.
They're up on the front. This group, Simple Actions, on Monday. It's a little ways off, but please feel free to take some of these flyers back to your groups and set them out. Monday, September 19th, we got in this very room. We'll have a 6 p.m. potluck. And Billy H. from Madison, Virginia, is going to come and tell his story. So we'll have potluck at 6, bring a dish if you wish, and 7 o'clock speaker, Monday, September 19th. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. And the whole reason we're here, is there anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? If we could just get your first name, we'd just like to welcome you. I'm not going to interview you. Anybody in their first 30 days?
Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Michelle. Welcome.
Anybody else? I feel like there's like two more. I'm often quite wrong. There's literature available right over there. If you can fold it, it's free. The books we sell at cost, which is written inside the book. If you need a book, please don't leave here without one. Just see any home group member. They'll take care of you there. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or you'd like additional information on sponsorship, come up and see me at the table afterwards. I'll be happy to talk to you. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided and stay well away from the church doors. Other people in the church use this building. We don't want them walking through clouds of smoke on their way out. All of our meeting audios are recorded and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, could we thank Maggie and Randall one more time? Please feel free to come up after the meeting and thank them. Thank everyone who participated, helped set up the meeting, helped clean up. All are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting, after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, a little Mexican place on 22nd and Colonial. So a bunch of us go out to dinner afterwards. All are welcome. And may I have a volunteer to read the last two, technically three, paragraphs on page 164. Nice and loud.
My name's Aaliyah and I'm alcoholic.
Our book
is meant to be suggestive of, we realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. Obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. For the cloud of Lord's Prayer.
What a...